This is Please Touch the Art, because you are smart and art shouldn't be scary. I am Kieve Roadheaver. I think that Maximum Security should have won the Kentucky Derby. That horse was rear-ended, in the words of my friend. I learned to crochet in a car at a very young age because my mother was very polite in trying to keep me not from being bored. And my dream vacation is Iceland. And today I'm here with my mumsy.
Hi.
Who are you?
Hi, my name is Margaret Roadheaver, and I'm Kieve's mom. I am now an indie author. I've just published my third book called Porkington Ham. Fun read, whimsical, magical realism for middle grade and tween readers.
Cool.
I'm a native of Ohio, currently living in Georgia. I studied journalism at The Ohio State University, and I once interviewed Chubby Checker.
I don't know who that is. Who is Chubby Checker?
This is an exercise for people to start Googling.
Do you want to take a stab at what we're looking at?
I'm looking at a picture of a woman's face and hands, also in the image. It looks like she's taking a contact lens out of her eye. The picture looks like it's from maybe the 60s or so. And it's a black and white image, but superimposed on it are some lines and words, and the words say, "We are not what we seem."
Okay. I also want to point out the colors in the image. As you were correct, it is a black and white photograph, which leads us to believe that it's older, especially with the style of hat and hair. And then the colors of the words are in white, and they are paneled in red rectangles that just go outside of the colors, and it's divided into three sections, the thinnest section being in the middle to highlight whatever this person is doing with their eye. I always interpreted it as like somebody putting in a false eye or a glass eye.
Could be. You're right.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to talk about this piece before we talk about who made it?
It's just interesting looking. The woman has a pretty face. You can see her long eyelashes, and obviously she has some dark nail polish on and a ring. Her hair is curled. Interesting.
Yeah, probably wearing makeup. Probably those nails look like they are long and painted, or acrylic, maybe. So this is We Are Not What We Seem. It is a collage from 1988 by Barbara Kruger.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about Barbara Kruger?
I don't think I've ever heard of her.
Barbara Kruger was born in 1945 in Newark, New Jersey. Barbara Kruger is a second wave feminist. We'll talk about what that means in a second. Essentially, Barbara Kruger's work, it tries to be easily interpreted by the masses, which is why it has like words that tell you exactly what this image means. You don't have to read an essay or anything like that to figure out what Kruger was trying to say with this piece. And we mentioned earlier that this picture is very pretty. It looks as though their makeup is done and like stuff like that. It feels very like 60s era to you. Barbara Kruger, what they are really famous for is using the language and imagery of advertisement to critique marketing techniques directed towards women, the media, and how women are portrayed in the media and how they're portrayed in artwork and, of course, like their personal lives and stuff like that. One of the things that's really interesting about Barbara Kruger's work is Barbara Kruger creates this really cool like nuance where it oscillates between inviting you, the viewer, in by using personal pronouns like we, you, things like that to kind of let you know that you are meant to be addressed as part of the crowd inside of like the imagery, while also kind of giving you that subverted image that makes you feel a little uncomfortable to kind of push you in and out of feeling included. Representing all the women, salute, salute. A lot of Barbara's works use aggressive declarative sentences like "we are not what we seem." Another really famous one is "your body is a battlefield." In this one, the consumer is meant to recognize themselves, and then they are meant to en masse react individually to the piece. Kind of like something that reminds me of that kind of power plays. I went to a concert when I was like 20, 21, and I went to see the artist Mary Lambert. And that stage presence is what I consider to be peak stage presence, in that I felt like, even though I knew that Mary Lambert was talking to the room, I felt like she was talking to me personally. And I think that Barbara Kruger is attempting to do that, but in a more, like, aggressive way, versus Mary Lambert was much more of, like, a coddler. Do you want to say anything else before we get into some, like, more, like, political things and more, like, art theory and where this lives in the discourse?
It is a little, the image is a little scary looking after you pointed out that you think she's probably putting in a glass eye. I was, like, kind of staying away from what exactly she was doing. And the way that particular eye is centered in the picture does make you focus right on it. Everything else in the image is pleasing and made to look approachable, I think, but that one thing is something you can't stop looking at.
Definitely. It is definitely meant to draw you in, especially because it's barred off. It's directly in the center. Do you know the rule of thirds?
No.
Okay, so the rule of thirds is that if you divide an image three ways vertically and three ways horizontally, the thing that your eye is meant to be most interested in should be placed where those, like, thirds meet along those third lines or in the corners where the thirds intersect. And that's kind of where this eye lives, just below that third. So your eye is meant to circle into, like, looking directly at it.
Okay.
And that's, like, a composition, like, thing. Let's talk a little bit about second wave of feminism. Do you know what wave of feminism we are in right now?
Third?
It's debated, third or fourth.
Okay.
It really depends. Knowing that we are looking at second wave feminism, we are probably looking at a non-intersectional feminine piece, meaning that this second wave feminism is very, like, focused on the idea of woman that is, like, every woman has something in common, is, like, the general belief of second wave feminism. Mm. They believe that, like, they believed that there was an essential woman. There was, like, a certain characteristic that woman was, and every woman had this in line with modernism. And modernism, essentially, when you break it down, is when it believes that every single thing that exists has a set of characteristics that make it up. So all women have the same characteristics. All men have the same characteristics. There is an essential painting. There is, like, a core in every sculpture.
And I take it you're going to burst our bubble and say that this is not so.
This isn't so. Postmodern theory believes that everything is different and that everyone has a different narrative and a different experience. So essentially, even though many women exist and even though many women have a similar experience sometimes, that doesn't mean that you have to have that experience to be a woman. For example, you don't have to experience motherhood to be a woman. You don't have to have a period to be a woman. You don't have to have the same genitalia as, like, another woman to be still a woman.
Good points.
You may recognize this name, Jackson Pollock.
Yes.
I have a lot of problems with Jackson Pollock, by the way. I know that he, like, had a lot of trauma and he was, like, going through a lot after World War II. But one of a very, very famous Jackson Pollock quote is, "I don't paint nature, I am nature." That's a very modernist thought that that man is in control somehow of nature versus what Barbara Kruger has to say, which is, "We will not play nature to your culture." So essentially saying that, like, it isn't necessarily natural for a woman to act how society wants them to. It's not necessarily natural for a man to act how they're meant to, quote unquote, in culture.
I'll go along with that.
Barbara Kruger didn't personally believe in binary opposites, which I think is rather forward, considering second wave feminism was very into binary opposites. And one of the things that she tried to subvert was essentialism and eternalization of womanhood. Do you know what either of those words mean?
Yikes. I guess I didn't do my homework before I came here.
You're okay. I didn't expect you to do your homework. By the way, my mother is the smartest person I know, so, like, it's okay that she doesn't know these words. They're big. I had to Google them. That's why I know what they are. Essentialization is essentially the modernist belief that everything has the set characteristics. Kind of think of, like, Plato's The Cave, how he believed that, like, the Earth was essentially a projection of the perfect Earth. If there was a horse on the other side of the cave, that horse would be the perfect horse, and we're only seeing shadows of the horse.
Gotcha.
So that's essentially what essentialism is. And then eternalization is the perpetuation of stereotypes. It's kind of like how we go, oh, all trans women are hyper feminine. They're not all hyper feminine, but there are narratives out there that would lead people to believe that trans women are hyper feminine, and the media presses them to be hyper feminine. Mm-hmm. Read Julia Serrano for more. link in the show notes to Julia Serrano. A very, like, iconic line that is prominently featured in second wave feminist ideal and propaganda, not saying that propaganda is bad, just that it exists, is the personal is political.
Right.
Meaning that everything that you do, you are more likely to identify with a person's very specific narrative than a generalized narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara Kruger, one of the things that she says is, we are responsible for the meaning that we create, meaning that you have to own every single thing that you have ever made as a maker, meaning that everything you make needs to have a statement or it's fruitless.
I was just going to say, I was interested in some of the things you said earlier. You talked about the personal is political and how you go from an individual's particular story into how their life is affected, you know, by the politics of the time and everything. And that has a corollary in storytelling and writing, in that, you know, you may want to write a story, say, about the Second World War, but you wouldn't write a sweeping story about the Second World War. You would focus, perhaps, on the experience of one particular right. individual and how it impacted them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can see the...
Right, kind of like how you read the Diary of Anne Frank. You don't just, like... It, and it means more to you than hearing, oh, the Nazis happened and concentration camps happened, and then trying to feel a feeling from that.
Exactly right. Also, you briefly touched on the idea of low versus high art. It made me think of something I was reading recently about commercial fiction versus literary fiction. And I think we're always inclined to have some sort of a value judgment in there, but which I don't think is appropriate all the time. And I wanted to know what you were saying regarding low versus high art.
High versus low art, similarly to your example, is kind of a construction. It's essentially like what you make it to be. High art is like stereotyped as Renaissance art, painting, sculpting, stuff like that. Low art is like grungy, punk rock, and like it typically enters areas that are considered to be more crafty and like stuff like that. So like The Fountain by Duchamp is considered low art. Do you know what The Fountain is?
Nope.
Sorry. The Fountain is the very famous urinal that he signed and put into a museum and said, this is a sculpture.
Okay.
Which we'll have, like, discussion about why that's actually, like, a magical in-joke for all art history ever. If you really want to know, actually, you should just listen to the Lonely Palettes episode of it, really. Kruger, where she stands in the discourse of feminism, is she is trying to take those romanticized images that we see and sexualized images that we see in advertisement and trying to ruin the presentations of that particular woman. And here we are seeing the intersection of low and high art, which is another thing that feminists kind of since the beginning did, along with like Dadaists, Cubists. We'll get into what that means when we talk about that. All of Barbara Kruger's pieces are meant to displace the subject of their piece. Rather than speaking to a male audience, they are meant to speak to female spectators. This work is meant to be consumed by women, and it is attempting to get away from the male gaze, or as Lacan called the male gaze the evil eye of the gaze. I actually wanted to say something a long time ago. I probably should let you.
Oh, that's okay. I was just going to repeat what you said. We are responsible for the meaning we create. It's also important when you think about what you're writing. And me as an indie author, I generally want to entertain my readers, but I also want to make a point to them.
Right, definitely.
So I think of some of the same considerations as this artist.
Barbara Kruger also identifies their work as being about pleasure rather than being about desire, which I think is a little interesting in how it deals with or does not deal with this piece. They like to differentiate pleasure and desire because desire implies that there is a lack in what you'd like for pleasure.
Hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about collage, photo montage, and assemblage, unless you'd like to talk about feminism a little bit more. So all of these things, honestly, are very similar to each other. I think that photo montage just sounds better in how we talk about art. I think it's taken, quote-unquote, more seriously. Walter Benjamin was the person who came up with the theory of montage. And Walter Benjamin essentially said that the recreation of somebody else's image to rearrange the hierarchy of importance in the image is what montage is. Let's say that you took a picture of a cat and then you superimposed it into space. And now instead of like the image being a cat in its natural environment, we're like, wow, this is a space cat now. Now it's important that this cat is in space. Or in the context of Barbara Kruger, we see her pasting images of like advertisements together and then putting in one or two elements that subvert that image, that make it feel uncomfortable. Right. So instead of looking at a beautiful woman who's probably just looking down or whatever, we now see a beautiful woman who might be implied to be a cyborg or something like that. It's no longer about like beauty and more about what is the beauty hiding. You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Collage didn't really come into the fine art, quote unquote, scene until artists like Pablo Picasso started using collage.
Okay.
Before that, it was kind of just considered a craft. Craft is a word for we don't believe that this is art, even though it is art. And usually craft is made by women, which the patriarchy likes to not take as seriously as... We all get it. There's a little bit of anger behind that like gatekeeping of what is craft and what is not. Cubists, they used collage first in the recognized art scene. And cubism, what they did was they took the idea that there's a single way to look at something and broke that down. And instead of looking at things at the image from one point of view, they broke it down into multiple point of views. Think about Picasso and the way that, like, you see all sides of the face at the same time and different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Collage was also used in Futurism, which is a very short movement in Italy, where they kind of were just rejecting traditional elements and embracing technology. It ended up being a little bit bigger in Russia than it ever was in Italy. Dadaism also used collage, and Dadaism is essentially a very anti-war, anti-art, anti-bourgeois movement, rather. Their entire thought process was, after World War II, how can we as humanity deserve art after we have created such pain?
Mm-hmm.
Why should we create something beautiful when we have created so much harm in the world? What does it matter if we can create a perfect sculpture if all of these people are dead? Like, essentially, it's people recovering from mass trauma.
Your discussion of montage and collage makes me think of, say, for example, a mystery story by Wilkie Collins, where he'll present facts of the story from the distinct perspective of different characters in the story.
Yeah.
And gradually, as you read it, you get to have the whole impression of...
Yeah, so that would be very cubist. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Hannah Hawke is a Dadaist and a feminist, kind of where they meet. And she is often described as the original punk artist. She was very political, which ended up getting her shoved out of the Dadaism movement, along with the fact that she was a woman. And she is considered to be the mother of photomontage so that Barbara Kruger can exist. I'll link her. So why do you think that Barbara Kruger uses collage? We've already talked a little bit about advertisement and stuff like that.
It's because you can mix two distinctly different things. You have the basic image of the attractive woman, approachable and attractively dressed and groomed, and then the overlayering of some of the scary stuff and then the specific statement that she's trying to make.
Yeah, definitely. I want to point out the way that Lacanian psychology and feminism interact. So Lacan, when he looked at Freud, he kind of broke it down even further. Freud was his springboard. And as you know, Freud was kind of like, we all are the way we are because we are sexually unfulfilled, because every boy wants to sleep with his mom and is afraid of his dad because he wants to sleep with his mom. And like, it's a mess. Freud is a mess. And Lacan essentially says, no, I don't quite think that's true. What I think builds a person is social interaction and language, and how language and social interaction within a culture ends up shaping how the ego is different from the id. It ends up shaping our desires. For example, like a child is told that they want a Transformers toy by the media. Therefore, the child wants the Transformers toy.
And all the cool kids have one.
Exactly. All the cool kids have one and all that. And it's deeper than that, but that's like a very simple way for me to break it down right now. Lacan also believed that your way of moving about in the world could only be in reference to what you'd already learned, the words that you were already given, right?
Mm-hmm.
And feminism, the works of people of color, the works of trans folk, the works of like any person who's marginalized, exists within the language that is made by the cis, white, straight male who is at the top of the food chain as far as like money and power are concerned.
Because they don't have to learn the other languages.
Right, because they don't have to learn the other languages. And in order for us to interact with each other and in order for us to explain our struggles to like the populace that doesn't understand what we're going through, or me, what I don't understand what people of color are going through, or what people in impoverished nations are going through, we all have to meet at the language that the cis white man uses. Mm-hmm. So that we can all interact with each other, which is a little bit of a disadvantage to us. And I think that's why we use collage. Collage is something that already exists in this discussion. The advertisement of the beautiful sexualized woman is what we have to work with, is what Barbara Kruger had to work with. And I think that's why collage has been used so much in feminist art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super interesting. It makes sense.
Yeah.
You're going from what we commonly know and understand to trying to stretch us in a different direction or teach us something new. And so we start with something familiar and then go from there.
Do you want to talk about anything else before I talk about the one thing that only I care about?
Go ahead. I'm interested to hear what it is that only you care about.
I only care about this. I talked about this at a party yesterday while I was drunk. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that I did a very good job of it. I made people do a lot of Googling so that I could actually prove my point. But
they had to check you out.
Have you ever seen the Supreme brand?
No.
So the Supreme brand is made by James Jebbia. It's an American skateboarding brand that came about in NYC in 1994. Anyway, their mission statement essentially is that they want to interact with a global community of different generations of artists that defy convention and contribute to the youth and punk culture.
Wow.
Well, their logo is just Barbara Kruger, I swear. Their logo,
interesting.
Their logo is Supreme in all capital white letters, outlined in a red rectangle. And every time I see it, I like point at them and I'm like, Barbara Kruger. And they're like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I'm smart. I'm sorry. And then I walk away. But I'm the only person on the planet who actually like cares that this exists, except for maybe James Jebbia.
Because you know, this image that we're discussing is outlined in red.
Yeah, and
divided
exactly.
In red. And the words that are in white text are on a red background.
Right. And if I had infinite time, I would like really like to like write an essay or have somebody else write the essay so I can read it that like talks about like all of the intersections of like what it means that they're using Barbara Kruger as their branding, essentially.
Interesting.
I think it's fascinating.
I think the Supreme brand is possibly a sponsor for this program.
I don't think they are, but okay. I mean, if they want to sponsor me, I have an email address that you can talk to me at. But anyway, that's fine. All right. I would like to start off by thanking WCBE for having me as part of their podcast experience. You can find this podcast at WCBE.org, Spotify. But if you use Spotify, you have to go to WCBE for all the image links. You can contact me via Twitter, Instagram, or my email. My Twitter and Instagram handle are Please Touch the Art Podcast, and my email is pleasetouchtheart@gmail.com. I also have a personal website at KRODEHEAVEARART.com. And I also have a personal art Instagram at kieve.art, KIEVE.ART.
I'm Margaret Roadheaver, Kieve's mom. You can follow me on Twitter at MMRoadheaver or learn more about me at my website, margaretroadheaver.com.
Awesome. And thank you again for coming, and thank you for being here and helping me move, because that's the real reason you're here.
Happy about being here.
And thank you again to WCBE.